today to attend with our lesson of the lives of the patriarchs. You will probably recall that in our last lesson, we considered Jacob, the son of Jacob, who was the beloved of his father. We'd like to meditate a little while upon that thought, Joseph, the beloved of his father. He's called the son of his old age, and yet we know that really the son of his own old age is Benjamin. But there was something about Joseph that was different than Benjamin. Joseph is now 17 years old, the time the story that he had before him. A young man, a boy, very noble principles, set a very high example for his brethren. So high, in fact, that his brethren were jealous. And that, of course, we recognize was the trouble with Jesus. He set too high an ideal for the scribes and the Pharisees and for his own people, in fact. And so they hated him and despised him, who himself was the father beloved. And not only this, dear friends, but we ourselves, if we are identified with Christ Jesus, we too are a part of the Father's beloved. And it will be because of the fact that we love truth, we love righteousness, and we hate iniquity, that we, like Joseph, will not be liked by our brethren. We know this to be a fact, don't we? The more sincere we are in our endeavors to do the will of God, the less we will be liked, the less we will be loved by those who call themselves the people of God. You take the Orthodox, you take the fundamentalist, the modernist, the agnostic, and all of these. Do they like you? I don't think they like you. They would like you if you didn't have the principles of truth and righteousness that you have. If you would occasionally compromise the truth, if you would occasionally just tell a little white lie to cover up some of their shortcomings, they would like you better. And this was just exactly the trouble with Joseph, of course. The beloved of his father, he couldn't compromise. He loved truth. He loved righteousness. And in his innocence, he told his father the truth concerning his brethren. Now, you will undoubtedly recall, dear friends, that Joseph had been sent down by his father to see how his brethren were. Supposedly, they had gone to Shechem there to take care of the sheep. And undoubtedly, Jacob was somewhat concerned because Shechem was the place where the people didn't like either Jacob nor his family. And there was good reason for this, wasn't there? You remember how cruelly they had massacred the people of Shechem. And so, of course, they went there and took care of their sheep. And it wasn't because of the fact that the people were unable to do harm to them. It was the fact that God did not permit them to do the harm that they were unharmed. But there's another thing about Joseph I'd like to bring to your attention once more before we go on with the lesson. And that is he wore a special coat, a coat that his father had made for him and given to him. It is sometimes called a coat of many colors. As to the correctness of the translation, we cannot say very much. We know that Luther used the expression coat of many colors, and that most translators that followed Luther used the same expression. The Hebrew text seems to have a coat of extreme. It was long, it had sleeves, and it came down much lower than ordinary coats would. But it makes no difference whether it was a coat, literally of many colors, or a coat which was extreme in its length and its pattern. That doesn't make any difference. The point is, it was a coat, an unusual coat, which identified Joseph and made him different, at least appear different from his brethren. Now, he was no different than his brethren insofar as being a son of Jacob was concerned. But in his outward apparel, there was something that his father had given him, which his father had given to none other of his brethren. And thus he was marked by this. And this, too, was an instance of their jealousy, of their envy of him. And we know that Joseph was a type of Christ Jesus himself. But if a type of Christ Jesus, he is also a type of Christ and his church, the Christ. And if we are, like Joseph was, the beloved of the Father, he too has given us a coat of many colors, a coat of extremes. Now the coat is not something that merely was observed by them as representing an honor or a dignity which Jacob had bestowed upon Joseph, but it was that which ever and always brought to their minds their own insufficiency, their own unrighteousness, because Jacob had honored Joseph because of his goodness, because of his purity, and there was very little indeed that could be said
for the other sons of Jacob.
All you need to do is consider the three oldest of Jacob's sons, the first three sons by Leah, and see what you have. You've got Reuben. Reuben was lustful, and he defiled his father's bed. You remember? When, on an occasion when Jacob was away from home, he, being the firstborn, undoubtedly assumed the headship of the house and took unto himself liberty and licenses which were not implied, and thus you have Reuben. When you come to Simeon and Levi, you remember their extreme cruelty to the people of Shechem.
There you have an idea of what some of these other sons of Jacob were.
At any rate, we find that Judah, who was the fourth, was no star in himself either, because as the next chapter, the 38th chapter of Genesis records, we find that he too, while one of Lee's children, who so stubbornly fought over the fact that Dinah, their sister, had been humbled,
Judah
didn't think too much of going into Tamar when he thought that she was a harlot. And just you see the common level to which all of the sons of Jacob seem to fall. And how refreshing
it is to find one member of the family
that stands out, and there's not a word of condemnation or reproof or reproach spoken against Joseph. No wonder he is such a beautiful type of Christ and the Christ. Perhaps there is no more beautiful type than Joseph, because even if we were to consider Moses, we do know that Moses also failed, that Moses also came short of the standard, and for this reason is not permitted to enter in. But there is so much of the life of Joseph that finds a parallel in the life of Jesus,
that there can be no doubt but that he was a type.
Not only a type of Christ himself, but a type of those who would be members of the Christ. Now, we bring you back again to the coat of many colors. We remind you that was a special gift that Jacob had given to Joseph. And so to you and to me, God has given a coat of many colors, a coat of extremes. And what is it? I would suggest, dear friends, that it is the character which you develop as a result of breathing in, taking in, assimilating, and absorbing the will of God. If you do this, it's going to make you extreme. Extreme in your love of righteousness. It's going to make you extreme in your hatred of iniquity. And this is the coat that you and I wear. And isn't it this that causes all of our brethren to be against us? They wouldn't mind so much if we weren't so extreme in our love of righteousness. If we weren't quite so extreme in our hatred of iniquity. If we would just sometimes compromise a little bit, then, of course, they would love us. They could overlook the fact that we love our Father supremely. But they can't overlook the fact that He has blessed us with this coat of many colors. And you see, it's really the outworking of the will of God in us. In the type, in the picture, you'll notice that the reason that Joseph was the son of his old age is not really because he was the son of his old age, but because in his old age, when he might have looked for comfort and refreshment in those who would represent him in future generations, what did he find? Just what we have found in Reuben, in Simeon, in Levi, and in Judah. And so, naturally, there was a natural antipathy, a natural hatred among those brethren, because Jacob had seen fit to honor Joseph above his brethren. Now, we would remind you that Joseph did have a younger brother. And this younger brother, of course, represents, if Joseph represents the Christ, the younger brother represents the great company Christ. They and we have a common mother. And let me say this, dear friends. Despite the fact that Jacob married Leah, his supreme love, and if you will permit me to use the expression in a very restricted sense, his passion was Rachel. He loved her supremely. Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah never could take the place of Rachel. And so the mother, the great covenant, which is the mother of the Christ, and the great company, is the most beloved of the covenants of God. It corresponds to the Abrahamic covenant. It corresponds to the covenant of sacrifice. All of these, you recognize, are pictures or symbols of the covenant. And so, of course, we see that there was another reason for which Jacob loved Joseph, because he was the son of the wife whom he loved supremely. And the reason that God blesses the Christ and the great company is because they too are the children of his most beloved covenant. Now, it so happens that Jacob sent Joseph down to intermingle and to tend the sheep which were now being tended by the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. Where, of course, you remember the concubines, the maids, who belonged to the wives of Jacob. And these were no better than the sons of Leah. In fact, the report was then current among all the people among whom they dwelt that they were wicked, that they were based. And of course, when Joseph got down there, he couldn't improve the situation. And you've never seen a good apple that could make bad ones good. But you might find bad ones that could make a good one bad. But this apple happened to be so good that it couldn't be made bad. So Joseph, of course, returns to his father and gives the evil report concerning the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. And of course, as we said before, this wouldn't have no tendency to make them love Joseph anymore. Even in the world today, anybody that is guilty of that, they say he's a telltale. He's a snake, you see. But dear friends, the principles of truth and righteousness transcend all of this, from true and so far as Joseph was concerned. He bore the tale, not of what he himself had first come to see, but that which was already recognized by all the people abroad. And so it says, these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wife. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made of many colors. Now you see, this was a coat that Jacob made for Joseph. And you can rest assured that the coat that you wear was made by your father, God in heaven. Had anything to do with it. And that is the reason you see history's complete. Whether it's colorful, it is colorful. But who can appreciate the color? It is extreme. The world is able to appreciate the extreme. But the color, no. The world is color black. He doesn't speak, only recognizes the extremes and what it implies. Have you ever gone to the people of the world and given them the message of God? You haven't gone there as your own representative. You've gone there as a representative of God. And Joseph, when he went down to his brethren, wasn't representing himself. His father had sent him, and he went to do the will of his father. Now, isn't this exactly what Jesus did? I do always the things that please the Father. He says so many times, the Father sent him. He was doing the things that the Father had sent him to do. And so you see, dear friends, how the pictures run parallel. Now, if we are of the Christ, also the antitype of Joseph, then we will find the same is true with us. It must necessarily be. We're sent. We're sent of our Father. No one else has sent us. And because we love him, we do the things that please him. And because we are the children of his old age. Now look, all creation has already been formed and finished. But in his old age, if we might use that expression, a new creation comes into it. Are we not the children of the old age? We are. Oh, there will be grandchildren after a while. But at present, we are the beloved of the Father. We are the Joseph whom the Father bedecked with the robe of many colors. And it says that when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peacefully unto him. Well, have you tried to speak to your brethren about the Lord and about his gracious will? Well, how come that you know these things and we don't know them? See? Well, of course, I know the reason that you know them is because your father has given them to you to know. He's blessed you with that. He hasn't blessed them with it. And so you see, immediately, you've got something that they haven't got. And when they discover that you've got something they haven't got, how much they love you for it. No, they despise you, they hate you, they deride you. And this was exactly the case with Joseph and his brethren. So they derided him, they hated him, they saw him. And when they saw that his father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably with him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet more. See? Now, the dream that Joseph dreamed was not the dream of indigestion or dyspepsia or anything like that. The dream which he dreamed was a God-inspired dream. So you do have a dream. It's a God-inspired dream. It's the divine plan of the ages. It's the glory that shall be in due time. In that dream, God shows you how you someday, as a member of the antitypical Joseph, will find sun, moon, and stars bowing down before you. But when you tell people in the world about the glory of that plan, and you tell them that someday you expect to be associated with Christ in the glory of the kingdom, that you expect to be among those that shall bless, what does it do to them? Who are you? I'm every bit as good as you are. And if you get to heaven, I surely will get there too. Well, of course, probably not as much of that arrogance, but nevertheless, there is that feeling there, you see. In other words, you're a dreamer of dreams, but the dreams which you dream are not like those philosophical sophistries of the world. You're going to have a nice world someday, but you know that it's getting worse and worse all the time. You look at the children today, no respect for age, sex, or anything anymore. And people say, oh, you mustn't interfere, you mustn't frustrate the child, don't hit it. Just give it an opportunity to express itself. And that's just exactly what they're doing. And self-expression is what is going to kill the world. And that's the reason the people of God are not permitted to express themselves. They express God. You see, that's the difference. And when you find one who expresses the will of God among those who express themselves, he stands out like a sore thumb. Stands out among all the rest. And do they love him the more for it? No, they'll love him less. And this lesson that we have here is a beautiful one, I think. It shows us our position before the Lord. Not that we have anything to glory in, but it is because of our appreciation and our love of truth and righteousness, because we appreciate our Father, we're ever ready to do His will, that He has clothed us with the coat of many colors.
But Jacob sent Joseph to see how his brethren were.
So, it says, and Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him the more. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf rose also and stood upright. And behold, your sheaf stood around about and made obeisance unto my sheaf. And his brethren said unto him, shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet more for the dreams and for his words. Now you see, it's one thing your dreams and another thing for your words. You see how this hate was building up. Just a little bit wasn't very bad. Bad enough. But it began to build up. And the more that Joseph did to reveal the grace and favor of his father, the less they liked him, the greater was the heat without him. And of course, when Jesus came into this world, He came to his own and they received him not. And the reason that they didn't receive him was because he spake as never man before had spoken. Because he was the expression of the Father. Because he was doing always the will of the Father. Those are the things that were in the minds of the scribes and the Pharisees. But there is a divinity that shapes our ends, rough hew them how we will. In other words, there is a God who overrules the providences. And though it may seem sometimes as though he had dropped the reins and the horse is running away wild, don't fool yourself. God never lets go. In the ultimate phases of his plan, his will is always accomplished. Even when it appears that Satan has been the victor, still that is a fulfillment of God's plan, because had he not desired it for a purpose to take place, he could have prevented it. And so if it is not his direct will, it is his permissive will. When Satan came in there to tempt Adam and Eve, it wasn't God's direct will, but it was his permissive will. And thus, you see, he overrules all things according to his own counsel, which will be the blessing of all the world of mankind. Now, it says here, his brethren, of course, they knew what it meant. And as soon as you tell people of the plan of the ages and how you have consecrated yourself to the Lord and what your object is in consecrating, they read right through that and see that you want to be something a little more than they are, you see. And that, of course, breeds a measure of contempt. And he dreamed yet another dream. And he told it to his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the stars made obedience to me. And he told it to his father and his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee? The earth. And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the same. Now that's a very sweet expression, man. He may have rebuked him, maybe, in his innocence, in his buoyancy. He had said something that he might have just kept a little to himself. So his father rebuked him, but he kept it in his heart. He still was the beloved of the Father. You know, sometimes you and I, whether you and I do, we're so buoyant, we're inclined to say everything that we think, but we don't think what we say. And the result is, where we intended good, evil is present. And the result is that we suffer a rebuke from the Father. But the Father still loves us despite that rebuke. We've learned the lesson. We don't find any record of Joseph telling any more of his dream. But we recognize that Jacob observed it, held it, and kept it in his heart. Now you see, Jacob was, of course, a descendant of Abraham and Isaac. He was an heir of the promise. But notice, dear friends, that he was not spared any hardship along the way. And we cannot expect that Joseph, who is even more a type of Christ than the Christ, to be spared any of the difficulties of the way. And it says, and his brethren envied him, but his father observed the same. And his brethren went to see their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren see the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, here am I. Now notice, dear friends, I think that Jacob was a little apprehensive. I think he was a little anxious because his sons had gone down to Shechem. And as we said before, the Shechemites, such as might have still remained,
were also a bit apprehensive about having the sons of Jacob again in their midst.
And probably Jacob feared for them that evil might come unto them. And so he sends Joseph down to his brethren as his own representative to find out whether all things be well, at peace with them. And he said, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. The father sent his son into this world, yes, to see how his brethren were doing. He did that. And what was the result? We'll see. So a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what seekest thou? For Joseph was only 17 years old. He'd gone down there to Shechem. He might have been just a little boy when he was down in Shechem. He's searching around for his brethren, and he looks as though he were lost. And some man, seeing him, takes pity on him and says, what are you looking for, son? He says, I'm looking for my brethren. They're tending sheep, and you must have described them. And this man had overheard these brethren of Joseph speak, the sons of Jacob speak. And so he says, and the man said, they are departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went out after his brethren and found them in Dothan. There was one who did go out after his brethren. And he sought. And he found. Sweet. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. You see how this hatred, he who hates his brother, has the spirit of a murderer. It is only a question of time. You know, that is a seed that you don't need to cultivate. That's a plant that grows with very little water, very little truth. Sometimes it'll grow without any truth. But sometimes truth will help. So sometimes it's wiser to withhold and not speak than to speak what you know. Because sometimes the truth has a tendency to cause the smoldering embers fan into a flame, conflagration which destroys, and it will, a civilization. Now notice what happens. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him. They conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, behold, the dreamer, the master of dreams, comes. How are you identified among your brethren? How do they of the world, the nominal church and so forth, look upon you? A dreamer of dreams? Fantastic. Who ever heard of anything like that? That isn't what the scriptures mean, what you think they mean. Of course, they know better. But how could they know better? Since God has blessed you because of your love of righteousness. Oh, Jesus was anointed with the oil of gladness above his brethren, above his fellows. Why? Because he loved righteousness and he hated iniquity. And that's why God has blessed you with a knowledge that he hasn't given to them. And as this knowledge manifests itself in you, and in your coat of many colors, your character likeness to Jesus, which is all the outgrowth of the things that you've received from God, the work of God in you and his Holy Spirit, how could they help but Satan despise you? Paul said this, Jesus is the disciple any more than his master? Here comes the dreamer. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dream. You see, hatred, jealousy, is as cruel as the grave. It robs the lover of his beloved. And Jacob loved Joseph, but the envy of Joseph's brethren was as cruel as the grave, because it brought down almost to the gray hair of Jacob. How sorrowful. The one who outstood all the rest, the one in whom, as you will see from his blessing of the children in the 41st chapter of the book of Genesis, where the blessings are recorded upon the different sons, you'll find there is something said about Joseph, even though it's nice what he says about Judah, but Joseph's a passage. Here you've got the love of the father. You can see his hatred, the father's own hatred of unrighteousness, iniquity, and his love of righteousness. He speaks about the weapons of cruelty that are in the tents of the habitations of Simeon and Levi. He says, I don't enter into them. Don't anyone else enter into them. They're weapons of torture, weapons of cruelty. So you see, the father knows, our father. And the question is, do we have the spirit of Levi? Do we have the spirit of a Simeon? Do we have the spirit of a Reuben? Do we have the spirit of a Judah? Or the children of Bilhah and Zilpah? Or are we the beloved of the Father? There's only one thing that will make you the beloved of the Father. You must love the Father's will concerning you. And the Father's will concerning you will set you apart from all of your brethren. So he said, now let's slay him, and we'll cast him into some pit, and we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him. Oh yes, you see, you do one wrong, and then you've got to commit another wrong to cover the last one that you've done, and so there's an endless concatenation of events, and you just can't get to the end of it. You just have to keep on, keep on. It's like the fellow that works in the bank and just takes a few dollars. He's a poor fellow, he's not getting too much wages from the bank, and so he says, I'll just take this little while, I'll play the horses. And he plays the horses, and the first time, you know, he wins $200. So that was easy, I'll take some more, and so he takes some more. Now he loses, and then to cover up what he's lost, he takes some more. He still loses, and he takes some more, and he keeps on, and the first thing you know, his debt is so great that he can't ever need it. Then he has to flee. And that's just exactly the way it is with sin. It grows, it's like leaven. Just a little bit. You have to add more to it. Take a little more and a little more. And finally it grows to such great proportions that it stops at nothing. Not even bringing down to sorrow their aged father. But Reuben, he had a good streak in him too, you know. He had much to fear from Joseph, because it would seem as though the father was going to make Joseph the firstborn, or give him the honors of the firstborn. It would appear that way. And since Reuben was the firstborn, he had more to fear than all of the others. But it seems, even in there is so much good in the worst of us, and so much bad in the best of us, so even in Reuben, there was something that was good, even though there was much that was bad. And so Reuben heard what these brethren were saying, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. Now I can imagine that he probably took a hold of young Joseph, and he says, come over here, Joseph. And he says, now, don't you kill him. Don't you do anything like that. If you want to do anything, I suggest that you cast him in a pit, alive. Don't touch, don't shed any blood. Just throw him down into a pit and leave him there. Well, of course, his object was later on to come along and to get his brother out of the pit and restore him to his father. Now, it is possible, we cannot be sure, that Reuben endeavored to reestablish himself in the eyes of his father since the sin that he had committed against Bilhah, against Jacob. He had uncovered his father's nakedness, and his father never forgot it. You'll find it recorded when the blessings are meted out by Jacob on his deathbed. But perhaps to reestablish him, he thought he'd do something good. At any rate, we find he must have withdrawn himself from the brethren, went away. And while he was away, they threw Joseph down into the pit. Now, these pits are not the kind of pits that you might be thinking about, but they're extremely deep. They're very wide at the bottom, and they narrow out to the top, so that there isn't any way in which you could climb out of them because of the fact that there's an inward slope toward the mouth of the pit, you see. And sometimes there is water in those pits. You drown. But no, on this occasion, there was no water there. But they let him down into the pit. Now the narrator of our story here says nothing about the anguish of Joseph while he was in that pit. But you will find the brethren themselves confess that anguish when later on they appear in the courts of Pharaoh before him, when they confess that they had sinned and didn't hearken to the cries of anguish of their brother in the pit. Now, notice, and Reuben said, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again. And it came to pass, when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him. And they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. Now you see, dear friends, they didn't like his coat. It was that with which the father had honored him. And you know, dear friends, when your brethren don't like you, what they do? They take that coat and drag it around in the dirt and the blood of a killed innocent goat. Now you see, whatever your reputation, whatever your influence might be among the children of God, it is that which constitutes the coat which God has given you, because whatever there is of the Christ life in you is the outgrowth of what the Father has given you. And so when Jesus says, blessed are ye when men shall revile you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake, great is your reward in heaven, you see. It's for the Father's sake. It's for Jesus' sake. In other words, whatever refers to Jesus must also refer to the Father. And so, Brother Russell often said, when the people began to disagree, when some of the brethren began to disagree with him on a point of doctrine, it wasn't long before they attacked his personal character. See that? Drag it right down. I can well remember some of the reports that we used to read in the papers in those days. Reports which could only have come from those who knew Brother Russell, who knew the truth. An outsider would never have known these things. And so, of course, they recognized the coat. And so they would say, well, we'll bring this back to Dad and tell him that our brother was destroyed by a wild beast. And so they killed the kid of the goat and took the coat in there and smeared it up with blood so that they could take it home as an evidence. And dear friends, just one sin compounds itself like interest in a savings bank, you know. A little here and compounding back, and it grows and grows and grows. And so now they're going back to tell their father that their brother was killed by a wild beast. And then they're going to turn around and comfort their father in his sorrow. Can you imagine that? Well, now, dear friends, the apostle tells us that these things were written for our admonition. It just goes to show how the little beginnings of sin, the secret fault, can grow out of all proportion. So we do those things which one time were so despicable and so mean. We get to the point where they don't seem to be so mean. They seem, as some say, well, it's just a matter of self-preservation, which is the first law of nature, and we've got to look out for ourselves first. But you see, that's contrary to the law of God. Whosoever will lose his life, he will save it. And whosoever will save his life, he must lose it. And so he goes on to say here, the recorder, and it came to pass when Joseph was come unto his brethren that they took Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was upon him, and they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty, and there was no water. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, being bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. Now I want you to see the presumptuousness of these children of Israel. Because they were the children of Israel, they were the children of Jacob. That's the children of Israel. Not only did they take away his coat of many colors and throw him down into the pit, but the luncheon, the food that he had brought from their father, for them, placed that down at the very mouth of the pit and started to eat it. And there the brother was down in the pit with anguish, crying. He paid no attention to it. The hardness of heart, you see, which comes. But you see, dear friends, sometimes I wonder if they weren't quite so bad when we drown ourselves. Well, that may be you, Brother Fry, but that surely is me. Well, it's all right then. We cast our brother down into the pit. We ruined his reputation. He's down there. He's in anguish, in pain. He's brought to us the food from the Father. And we sit at the mouth of this pit and sit there and eat it. How can we eat the food which the Father has sent by the messenger if we are so kind, unkind to the one that the Father has sent? Those scribes and Pharisees in Jesus' day, they would receive all that the Father had sent by way of Jesus. Yes, except where it condemned them. Oh yes, we are the teachers that sit in Moses' feet. Didn't he say so? Of course he did. Didn't he say they were to do the things that we taught the people? Of course those were the things that came from God. And yet they would cast him into the pit. His blood be upon us. See? And so it gradually compounds itself. It comes to the place, you see, where they despised their brother, threw him into the pit, paid no regard to his cries of anguish, and presumptuously sit at the mouth of the pit eating the food that the Father had sent by them. So now notice, dear friends, that's not the end of the picture. There's this caravan that comes along. You see, Dothan is right here, the crossing, the meeting roads of these caravan routes between Palestine and the land of Egypt. And they were carrying spices and myrrh and things like that down there. And of course, as this caravan came along, an idea struck Judah. And again, I say there's so much good in the worst of us and so much bad in the best of us. But maybe it doesn't behoove the rest of us to talk about any of it. At any rate, Judah thought now he would saved the boy's life. He said, now listen here. Why leave him down there? We can get money. Let's sell him as a slave. So, of course, they would get him out of the pit. And, of course, Judah sold his brother.
Judah?
Yes, Judah. He was responsible, but he did it only because he endeavored to save the life of his brother, feeling perhaps in his heart that Joseph might someday, in some way, break loose and come home again to his father and perhaps confound his brethren. What may have been the thought in the mind of Judah? We cannot tell too clearly, but evidently, as the scriptures imply, it was with the idea of saving his life. First, Reuben suggested that they do not shed blood. And now, Judah says, let's not leave him there to die either. We'll just sell him. And there again you have the picture of the Christ who came to his own, his brethren. They received him not. No. But what happens? Though they didn't receive him, he will be the one who, in the providences of God, will bless. You see, there's the magnanimity of God. There is the grace of God. It doesn't say, if you will do this for me, I will do that for you. That's the way you and I oftentimes do. Well, if you do this, I'll do that. Well, in fact, you could never do that which would satisfy God unless God condescended to accept the little that you have to offer for the much that he has to give. But what he gives, after all, is a gift, because you could never pay for it. You haven't the wherewithal. And I think it's a suggestion that we heard from last week about Peter. What are we going to receive? Look all that we gave up. And when you come to think of it, what did he give up? An old torn fishing boat, some mended nets, oh, whatever else there might have been. And for that, what did he want? Isn't it the same with you and with me? Sometimes we think, oh, look at what I've done. I left my wife and my family. I left my folks and left all of these things. I never see them anymore. They don't want anything to do with me anymore. I've done that all. Yes, but you can't boast in that, because even though you did all of that, it's still nothing. It's not righteousness, is it? No, of course it isn't righteousness. But dear friends, you see that God doesn't look at the little that you do, but at the much that you would do if you could do. I hope that doesn't confuse you too much. And he said to David of old, David wanted to build the temple of God. And God through the prophet says, oh no, your hands are too bloody. But it was a good thing that it came into your heart. You see, even though God couldn't accept what David wanted to do, it means a lot when God says, well, it's a good thing nevertheless, that it came into your heart. And so, isn't it sweet to know that God looks at our heart intentions rather than on the things that we do? Well, and they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels. Now, these Ishmaelites, Midianites, probably there were Midianites and a few Ishmaelites at the head of the caravan, at least it was a combination of these. They were traveling on their own timetable. They had left certain cities, arrived at other cities, and then they'd made up their mind they would leave this city at a certain time and get on to another place. And so they were traveling on their own timetable. At least that's the way they thought. but they weren't. They were on God's timetable. Because just at the time when Joseph's brethren were at the mouth of the pit eating, that's just the time that they passed the well. That was just the time the idea struck them, Judah, that they could sell their brother. Dear friends, that is the overruling providence of God. Sometimes, you know, things seem to be running the way the world anticipates they will run. And they can forecast and foretell. Sometimes they can tell that you're going to have 3 or 4 more hot days in a row or something like that. But when it comes to long distance forecasting, they're a failure. Like the one year they said we were going to have 51 snowstorms, and we had 7 that year. And that. But that's the way they do it. That's their timetable. Sometimes it works out right. But God's timetable never fails. And so just at the moment they were there, so that Joseph was taken out of the pit, not left there to languish and die. And that, dear friends, is the way that God moves his beloved to the throne. He lets them get down into the pit. He doesn't interfere with any of the evils that are conceived against them. He allows them to go just so far as in the case of Job. Yes, you can do this and do that. You can come just so far, but you can't take his life. You notice they couldn't take his life. And those who had undertaken to destroy Jesus, they couldn't take his life, could they? Oh, yes, they succeeded in getting him out of the way and throwing him into a pit. That they did. But they couldn't take his life. Could Jesus still live, had left his brethren, had they succeeded in destroying Joseph, there never would have been a Joseph who could have blessed them together with Egypt. So in the overruling providence of God, if you do have a birth experience, and if they do come in ways that you least expected, from those whom you have loved the best and who have loved you the best, it may be. The Lord permits it. He could stop it if he wanted to, but he doesn't. So that you might be rightly exercised, that you can experience the depths of anguish, and the lower that you have gone in the experiences of your anguish and pain, the greater will be your exaltation and your power to bless those who have cursed you and who would desire to do all manner of evil against you. Now, dear friends, as we will find, I am sure, that these lessons of the life of Joseph are going to be especially good for us. They're going to be good for us in the development of a character that is pleasing to our Father. They're going to be good for us in giving us encouragement along our way. We're going to see some of the trials and difficulties that Joseph had to go through, even though he was ordained, as we might say, by the foreknowledge of God, someday to be the blesser of his brethren. He had some very bitter and some very trying experiences. Dear friends, let's take comfort. The comfort of the scriptures, and that's what we have here. When we consider Joseph, his experiences, our own experiences, and yet there must not be any bitterness come up in our hearts. Not against any of our brethren. As in the case of Joseph, what would you have done? Oh, those rascals, if I ever get a chance at them, I'll fix them. Would you? There was an evangelist in New York said, I wish I could be gone for 5 minutes. I'd fix them. Well, fortunately, God is not going to let him be in the place of God for 5 minutes. But you see, the spirit of the Christ is the spirit of Joseph. You don't find the word of retaliation. You don't find the word of rebuke or reproach. The most that he ever says is, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. He sent me on here a little in advance of you to prepare for you. So, whatever experiences we may have to endure, they're just so that in a little in advance of the rest of our brethren, we may reach the exalted position of favor with God, where we in turn can pour out the promise, his blessing, and his favor to God.